Listen and earn to the Profit Express with your host, Tim Healy. For over a decade, Tim has helped the Long Island business community create sales systems through sales system development, training, and coaching. Tim is also the president and owner of Healy Success Solutions. Get ready as we create big-time profits for your business today. Now, here's your host, Tim Healy.
Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and I want to invite you to join me each week as we tackle the hottest stories, topics, and trends about today's entrepreneur right here on the Profit Express on 88.7 FM WRHU. So thank you for listening. Now, if you happen to be on Facebook and you'd like to follow the show and follow the amazing guests that we have coming up each week for you, you can go to the Profit Express page, give us a thumbs up, a like, let us know what you think about the shows, give us your comments, your feedback. And you can also get updates, of course, on Twitter by following us at Radio Tim Healy, and that's at Radio Tim Healy. Now, for today's bottom line benefit, which you all know goes on at 6:45, you're going to hear Tom Fabry, who is our resident life-wrangling mountain climbing fitness guru and author of Ageless You and his latest book, Ageless You Adventure. And Tom will share how your health really is your wealth. And today, Tom and I will discuss how travel can be a huge benefit to you personally and professionally. So it's going to be a very interesting show, so make sure you stick it right here. Stay tuned. I don't know if I meant to say stick it right here, but that didn't sound so good. But stay tuned, I should say, to the Profit Express and the Bottom Line Benefit on 88.7 FM WRHU. Now, has the economy been on your mind recently? Almost sounds like a silly question. Have you been feeling a greater bite has been taken out of your wallet due to the seemingly soaring taxes that have become second nature here on Long Island? Now, on a global scale, people like you and I are left wondering, well, hey, what's the impact with this economic train wreck known as Greece? What kind of economic impact is that going to have on us? The factors that are currently impacting our economy here on Long Island, as well as on a national and global scale, are many. Now, the list of factors that could have a not-so-positive impact on your financial well-being include, of course, taxes, lack of well-paying job prospects, and the brain drain here on Long Island. And then on a national scale, we have to consider the minimum wage debate, the effect of Obamacare, and other global economies like Greece and now even China. Now, to help me tackle the topic for you, I've invited on Dr. Martin Cantor, CPA. He's the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. And he's also served as Suffolk County Economic Development Commissioner. Of course, Suffolk County is New York's largest suburban county, and in that role, he brought computer associates to Suffolk County and created over 23,000 jobs with an estimated $1.4 billion in annual payroll impact to the county. So it's time to talk some turkey, it's time to talk some economics and its impact on you, your family, and your future here on Long Island. So it's a pleasure to welcome aboard the Profit Express, Dr. Martin Cantor, CPA, and again, Director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. Dr. Cantor, how are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I've been looking forward to this conversation because the hits keep on coming. There's more and more for us to talk about, it just seems.
Yes, unfortunately, there is.
And we'll get to that. We'll try and cover as much of it as we can. But let's start with what is almost a universal concern for you, the person listening right now, and that's the tax situation. So, Martin, can you describe why for the Long Islander? Let's drill down to Long Island for a moment. Why our tax structure has gotten so out of control here?
Well, you know, the first thing is when Long Island's property tax structure was put in place in the 1940s, or 37 actually, it was presumed that if you could afford to buy a particular house, your income would be able to pay the property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened over the past 40 years, 50 years, what's happened is that actually almost 70 years actually, what's happened is the housing prices have gone up, the assessments have gone up, Mm-hmm. The property taxes have gone up exponentially, but the ability of Long Islanders to pay those high taxes has become struggling because the wages have not kept up with the higher assessed values of homes. So the original thesis was if you could afford a higher priced home, you could afford to pay higher taxes. No longer exists. People who are living in the homes today would not be able to afford to buy the homes they originally purchased years ago.
So why aren't we making adjustments for that?
That's politics. And it's also, as Poland once said, we've seen the enemy and we is us. The reality is the property taxes has outlived its life as a way to raise money to pay for our schools and our municipalities. What really should happen is we should be going to an income tax where it's more progressive. Those who are earning more pay more, not those who live in more expensive homes pay more, whether they can afford those homes or not.
It's funny, as we're talking, I know of somebody, I won't mention names, they did a big renovation on their house down in the Merrick area.
Yeah.
Put a lot of money into the house. The new assessment, now my understanding of the story is they kind of tried to get a figure on what the taxes would be before they, of course, committed to the build-out. Long story short, they come in and they assess the taxes in Merrick at $22,000.
Yeah, because the new additions increased the assessed valuation of the house, and the assessed valuation of the house and the taxes were way more than the income earned by the people who are living there. And that's the inequity in our taxing situation.
Because you have people hearing those kinds of stories like, well, maybe I won't do some, home renovation or expansion onto my house, which of course has another negative ripple effect on the economy.
Well, it does. The construction, the people who are doing the work, the jobs created, all that stuff. So we have to take a hard look at how we're taxing ourselves to pay for our services.
Now, you've been covering the Long Island economy for, I think it's nearly 30 years now.
Oh, God. It makes it sound old.
But you look fantastic, Stop. Don't worry about it.
Thank you so much.
If you had to give it a physical, if you will, what shape is it in today in 2015?
Well, there are several different places you could place the thermometer. The first one is, could Long Islanders, excuse me for the frog in my throat, could Long Islanders who originally came here years ago afford to come here now? The answer is no.
Right.
Could young people who we need to live on Long Island to be able to sustain a workforce live here now? No, the answer is no.
Right.
They can't. The salaries that our young people are earning are way less because of the wage structure for the last 14 years. People are not earning the wages that people could earn with the skill sets that they have can't sustain them for living here. So therefore, we are not creating an atmosphere where our next workforce and our next citizens can afford to live. So that's the second negative. The seniors who are here, the ones who built this region, are looking to downsize, but then there are fewer people available to buy their homes. So we have some real serious financial issues for how we keep Long Island moving.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, for you listening, again, this is Prophet Express right here on 88.7 FM WRHU. And today we're talking about the economic environment here on Long Island and abroad. And to help me discuss that, today's guest is Dr. Martin Cantor, CPA. He's the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. Now, for you listening, if you don't already know, and Martin kind of alluded to it a moment ago, Long Island suffers from what is called the brain drain. In other words, the college graduates are either not coming back and or they're leaving Long Island as a place to live and work. So, I know we talked about this before. It's hard to predict an economy beyond 3 to 5 years. But what do you see beyond, the cost of living? What is going to be some of the impacts of the brain drain here on Long Island?
Well, what the issue is, in a study I conducted, and we got response to about 450 millennials, mm-hmm. and those are the ones who are between about up to 35 years of age, between 24 to 30, basically those born in 1980, 1990, and the beginning of 2000, what's happening is what they've told us is that they can't find jobs that hire with the skill sets that they've graduated college with. They can't find jobs that that give them the money that they consider their skill sets worth. You know, worth. That's a problem. So what happens is these young folks that are so essential for the growth of our economy, they move to places where they can afford to live and where their skill sets will get a salary that will pay them where they can live. Places like Austin, Texas, you know, the Carolinas, you know, Long Island doesn't have that. While we create housing in downtowns, some of those housing charges rent beyond what some of these millennials could afford to pay because they're not getting jobs with a skill set, paying the salaries that they anticipate, that the skill sets they feel will generate. So that's an issue. So what happens is some of the smartest and the young and the most vibrant young people are moving off Long Island, and we've seen that. We have a negative retention rate on people leaving the island. We're, you know, we lose more people than we take in.
Oh, that's not good.
And that's no, that's not good at all, because we all know that as Long Island ages, and certainly like Long Island and other places in this country, the largest, the most quickest growing demographic are those 55 and older. And so when we retire and people want to downsize, who's going to buy the homes of those people? And it's got to be the millennials and the Gen X people, but they're not earning salaries that can allow them to buy homes. That's a problem.
Well, yeah, and it'll have obviously an impact on the housing market here for those reasons, of course.
Well, now, supply and demand, you know, if you don't have, we have a supply of housing that continues to grow, but if we don't have the demand fueled by young people with wages that can afford to buy the homes, then that depresses housing prices.
And it's funny because you see, whether it's, you know, on Facebook or Twitter, you know, you see these lists of the top 10 cities to live and work for, and New York is nowhere to be found ever.
Ever.
Long Island in particular, nowhere to be found. It's in places like Idaho, Austin, Texas, as you mentioned, the Carolinas, Raleigh, Durham. Never have I ever remember seeing New York or Long Island on any of those lists.
No, we don't. And whereas we, you know, whereas New York State can say, well, we're creating jobs, what's not said is how many we're losing and how many young people are losing to less expensive places in the country where their skill sets will afford them a salary where they can afford to live and play.
Do you think, and maybe this is almost a question I would tend to have towards the end of the interview, do you think Long Island can figure this out?
Well, yeah, you know, supply and demand always seeks equilibrium. Okay, and what happens, you know, in every economy, people leave where they can't afford to live, they go where they can afford to live. You know, Long Island is trying, but right now we're addressing issues, but we're not creating affordable solutions.
All right, so we're talking about it. Everybody's aware of it.
Yeah.
But no solutions yet.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's, you know, talking the talk. But walking the walk is more difficult because it causes, you know, what happens, you know, Tim, is that, you know, chronic problems require structural solutions. And what's happening on Long Island, our chronic problems, we become unaffordable. Our health care is too high, or our property taxes are too high, you know, the energy costs are too high. Those are structural issues. We're creating fewer higher-paying jobs. The higher-paying jobs are leaving. That's a structural issue. So, but we don't, you know, that's a chronic problem, rather. But we're not creating the structural solutions to make it affordable for young people to stay, affordable for businesses to stay, a lower cost in energy, lower property, you know, taxes.
Right.
So, Albert Einstein once said, you know, offering the same solution for existing problems is insanity.
Right.
And expecting a different result is insanity, and that's what we're doing.
You know what? Listen, I'm not a smart economist like you. I'm just a common sense kind of guy, an entrepreneur here. And come on, it's not that complicated. I'm not saying it's not hard work to fix the problem, but can't any of the politicians, the elected officials, see down the road just a little bit?
Well, you know, to be fair, the politician can see down the road, but the rest of us can't. And the issue is that the people vote for politicians, and the politicians lead the people. And until the people say, hey, man, we get it. We get that we need to change how we tax ourselves. We need to change how we provide health care. We need to change how we provide health insurance. That's not giving the politicians the backbone they need to do, create change. So it's really not the politician's fault, because if a politician comes out and says, I want to create an income tax to finance schools, then somebody will say it's going to raise your taxes, and then they get voted out of office. So the electorate and all of us have to be a little more sensible and a little wiser to understand that if we want change, it's up to us to drive that change and not listen to the pandering of those who will do using fear to avoid change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take it off the island for a moment. Let's go international. Greece is all over the news with their vote of no to the most recent bailout offer. So first, I'd like to know, what's your opinion of that decision? And then, okay, what's going to be the impact on the U.S. economy?
Well, the impact of the decision makes, the decision itself by the voters makes eminent sense. Who would vote to decrease their pensions and increase their taxes? Nobody. If you put that on Long Island, we get the same vote. All right, what the Greeks say is, hey, the Greeks bailed out Germany after World War II, so why is by forgiving debt? So why are the Germans not forgiving a debt of the Greeks? In this sense, the other side of the coin is the entire Greek economy is based on working, retiring at 40, and living and not producing. No, anybody of us would sign up for that. All right, so they're an economy of non-work, non-productivity, sitting back, drinking wine, and we're going to live off the fat of the rest of the euro, zone, right. And that's not fair either. And so Greece is living in a fantasy land. Unfortunately, because of that, and because of the fantasy land that the Greek government has promised the Greek voters and taxpayers. And remember, we are in Greece right now. There is a leftist government,
right?
A socialist government.
Mm-hmm.
Before this socialist government came in, there was a right of center conservative government, which was cutting spending, cutting taxes, encouraging economic growth, encouraging job growth, and the Greek economy was growing. So when they voted those people out, because who wants to work hard if they can sit back and collect a pension? So now they got the left-wing people coming and saying, you should be able to retire, and we don't want, just what's happening in the U.S. There are a lot more takers than givers, a lot more people not working, a lot more, revenue and income shifting from those who work hard going to those who don't.
But you know what, Martin, to me, and folks, it's the Prophet Express right here on 88.7 FM WRHU. To me, I know what you're saying, the human nature. Hey, if you could, not work nearly as hard and live off the fat of other people, hey, who wouldn't do it? Maybe it's just how I was raised. Maybe it's what I do for a living. I can't fathom it. And I know it might sound like an ignorant statement, but it has such a horrific impact, and it's never really that far down the line that impact comes calling.
Well, you're right. I mean, you're talking to someone whose father went to school 10 years at Night at City College to graduate, and whose grandfather worked a push cart on Pitkin Avenue during the Depression.
Right.
I mean, so my whole family upbringing has been working hard,
mm-hmm.
Getting an education, and the economic benefits inure to you. That's not what's going on in Greece. And that's what makes the U.S. so important as an economic power, but that's what also is in danger with some of the philosophy coming out of Washington in terms of American economic strategy, is that out of Washington we're encouraging people not to work. We're encouraging people to be takers, not earners and givers,
mm-hmm.
And that's not going to benefit the rest of the economy.
So then, okay, so the Greeks have decided, they voted no. They're hoping that the Germans will forgive them, I think it's $260 billion, roughly.
Well, I mentioned the Germans. I mean, the French are there.
Well, the Euro, right.
Italians. The Germans are the largest economy on Long Island, and you can't find more people who work harder and longer in Europe than the Germans.
Right. So then, okay, so what are some of the implications of this? I mean, is a smaller economy, obviously, Greece, or there won't be that much of an impact, or will there be a bigger impact than we're thinking?
Well, the impact for us is a lot of our banks here invest in businesses in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
The bond market, remember, I think it's like 200 and some odd billion dollars in bonds and debt that the Greeks owe the euro. That's a lot of money.
Yep.
Who buys that debt? It's not only the eurozone. You know, America buys it, and other economies that have higher economic value buy it. So our bond market can be impacted by a collapse of the Greece economy. That's why you see, you know, the U.S. Stock market hiccuping in the last couple of days.
And folks, it's the Profit Express. We're talking economics here in Long Island, in America, even globally, as we're just discussing Greece. Of course, today's guest is Dr. Martin Cantor, CPA. He's the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. And on so many reasons, it's obviously an important topic for you, the listener, whether it's the tax crunch, whether it's the brain drain, as it were, with all of our gifted young people leaving because they can't afford to live here. There's just so many things to talk about. Martin, do you have some time to stick around?
Sure.
Excellent. Coming up next, we're going to continue the conversation, which is with the topic. You know what? If you're working at McDonald's, should you expect it to provide a living for you? Right here in the Profit Express on 88.7 FM, WRHU.
Now, back to the Profit Express on 88.7 FM, WRHU. Once again, here is your host, Tim Healy.
Well, welcome back to the Profit Express. Man, if you were here in the studio, my engineer, Lisa, and I were going at it, man, because she heard, you know, the tease, if you will, talking about the minimum wage. And I think she would love to get on there, but I just won't let her. I'm just going to just let it all build up inside of her. Today's guest, because we're talking economics here on Long Island, nationally and globally, and we have a really interesting guest today, and he's Dr. Martin Cantor, CPA. He's the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy, and he also served as the Suffolk County Economic Development Commissioner. And of course, Suffolk County is New York's largest suburban county. And while he was there, he helped bring computer associates to Suffolk County and created over 23,000 jobs with an estimated $1.4 billion in annual payroll impact to the county. So again, Martin, thanks so much for being on board today.
Oh, my pleasure. Also, that was during a recession that I created those jobs. And for your listeners, because I know this is Hofstra, I earned my master's in interdisciplinary studies from New College at Hofstra in 2001.
Go so, Pride. Excellent.
So I'm a Hofstra grad.
Excellent. We always love to have Hofstra alum on the show for sure here on the Profit Express.
Super.
Now, if you're just tuning in, we're going to jump into the debate. Hey, if you make hamburgers at McDonald's, and of course McDonald's is, you know, the one to be at the center of this whole debate, should I expect it to provide a living for me? So let me turn to you, Martin.
You know, here's what I think. Do I think the wage earned by people at McDonald's is enough to live? No.
Of course.
But do I think that we should legislatively increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour? The answer is no. I think that everybody who I've, in my generation at least, and others that followed me, we got lower paying jobs, we got our education, we worked our way up. A minimum wage job is not a career job. It is an entry level job. McDonald's is an entry level job. It's not a permanent job to pay a living wage. People who are, in my opinion, and this was part of, quite frankly, President Obama's former economic advisor, who said we should provide education and ability for people who start out in lower paying jobs to get the learning and the skills to outgrow them. So what this right. When you increase the minimum wage to $15 artificially for McDonald's, we are stopping that ability for people to work their way out of it. We're saying that if McDonald's should be a living wage job, which it never was meant to be. So the issue, really, the debate is: should minimum wage artificially raised to provide a living wage, or you know, should we go back to the basics of American economic policy where you come in, you get a lower paying job, you go to school, you work your way up, you get higher skills, you earn more money, you leave the lower paying job for other people to follow you, and you work your way up the scale. What's happened from out of Washington is we're getting a policy where where we're transferring wealth to those who don't make enough from those who do to really subsidize a higher minimum waging jobs and nulling the ability to grow. We are creating a Greece in the United States. And that's what that's the debate I'm offering. We have to. We can't fall in to the way Greece is right now, where we guarantee a higher wage, where there's no productivity and no income activity associated with that increased wage.
So, if you look at it beyond the economic impact of going from what is minimum wage now? The federal is at what, nine?
$9, $10 somewhere around there.
Right.
Now, do I think that's enough? No. Do I think it should be raised, you know, incrementally? Yes. Should it be $15 an hour to pay someone who flips hamburgers at McDonald's? No.
Right. So then, but what happens? So even beyond the economic impact to the corporation who would have a, you know, whether it be a 50%, 60% raise, increase in wages that they would have to absorb and, of course, I guess, pass on to the consumer.
Yes, and it's passing on to the consumer on Long Island, by the way. And if you take a look at the wages and the increase in wages over the past 14 years, mm-hmm. that Long Islanders have earned, it's been less than 1% a year. And, you know, increase in hardworking Long Islanders. So we are artificially increasing the minimum wage to workers in McDonald's, while those who are working in the Long Island economy and struggling have not had their wages gone up the same percentage.
So you're saying for the average Long Island worker, their wages have gone up around 1%?
1% a year. I mean, over 15 years. I mean, and you can't, over the first decade of this millennium, wages have gone up way less than 10%. Whereas all our costs, energy, property taxes, health care, have gone up about 30, 40%. So what happens to the hardworking people who are not getting the wages increasing, and yet we're willing to put up, you know, almost a 50% increase in the minimum wage?
So then, again, beyond the economic impact, what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, and I tend to agree with you on this, is more than that, as important as that is more the impact on the mindset to the culture here in America, and you made the argument, it's developing somewhat of a Greece mindset, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I go back to my own background. You know, like I said, my father went to school 10 years at United City College. Mm-hmm. They worked at a pushcart on Pitkin Avenue, you know, during the Depression. Nobody gave them a minimum wage. They worked their tail off. We are encouraging people not to work, to grow. We're encouraging people, saying, if you want more money, we'll just take it from the wealthy and pass it on to you, and you don't have to strive. We're taking away the road to the American dream by creating an economy and a populace that takes from others. And that's not what America was about.
Do you think it can change?
Oh, of course it's got to change. I think it's going to change. I think we need an increase in the minimum wage, but it shouldn't be 15%. I think the governor is pandering to an interest group. We shouldn't go, you want $15? Sure. Do people who work at McDonald's deserve $15 an hour? Absolutely. Is McDonald's paying enough money? Not. But the reality is, how do we get there? Do we get there by hard work? Do we get there by increasing your skill sets? Do we get there by education, as President Obama's former advisor said? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or do we take it from those hardworking middle-class Long Islanders on Long Island who will have to pay more at McDonald's, for the meals to increase them $15 an hour? I would say that we shouldn't be taking the money from hardworking Long Islanders to support others. Let everybody get in the boat and row together.
Well, the way I look at it, you know, again, who doesn't want, you know, a raise? Who doesn't want a bonus? You know,
okay? Oh, yeah.
But for my, and again, I'm an entrepreneur. You
yep.
know, my salary is created directly by me and by nobody else. So I want a raise. I just go out and create one.
There you go. And you make more business. You work hard. You get
right.
more business. You don't sit back and say, other people should pay me.
Because I can't do that. It's not an option.
No, of course not. I mean, if you put up a picket sign saying, I want more money, my neighbor needs to give me the money.
Right.
It's not going to happen. So I think we're losing sight of what America is about. And you know, this is part of our, this is where I fault the politicians. This is where I fault the people who are running for the president. This is where I fault the White House. This is where I fault everybody saying you deserve more money, so we're going to take it from those people who earned it and made it and give it to you. That's not acceptable. And on Long Island, when the costs of living are so high, why should people who work their tail off have to not afford to live here to pay money for other people? That's not acceptable.
I can hear lots of people yelling at their radios now, Martin. For and against, I'm imagining, like any good debate or any good discussion, you have for and against, of course. I think you get the sense of where I'm standing. Now, let me ask you, let's go back to Long Island economy.
Yes.
What kind of an economy do you think Long Island is best suited for now in the next 3 to 5 years? Because you and I have talked off the air, and you said we're kind of going back to that bedroom economy of Manhattan. We're shifting, and that can be dangerous. How do we take advantage of all of the resources and assets that Long Island has to strengthen our own economy here? What do you think we can possibly do?
Well, a survey I conducted for the Long Island Forum for Technology or Manufacturing, which has the highest-paying jobs, in the region, a lot of those companies are leaving and contemplating leaving. That's the first thing.
Ugh.
Second thing is, you know, you find more commuters going into the city. Well, they're going into the city because that's where the higher-paying jobs are.
Mm-hmm.
For every one higher-paying job we've created on Long Island, we've created two lower-paying jobs. All right, so what's happening is Long Island, whereas we once were a bedroom community to Long Island, which means we slept here and worked in the city, and that was in the 1990s, and we started growing during the 90s and the early 2000s into becoming our own sustainable, higher-paying, job-generating economy. What's happened right now is we are lurching back to become a bedroom economy to New York City because we are sleeping here but earning more money in the city, only because we're creating lower-paying service sector, healthcare, retail, wholesale, part-time jobs. And the Affordable Care Act, that Obamacare, has created a situation where businesses will now have part-time jobs created so they don't have to provide health care.
Right.
So we are in a situation right now where people can't work full-time. They have to pay for their health care and their lower-paying jobs. That's not good. It's not sustainable. And that's where we're heading.
Now, you can't quote me on exactly when, but isn't the corporate mandate on the ACA rolling out in 2016?
I think it's 2017.
It is 2017.
So I think the corporate mandate kicks in, and also the Cadillac tax kicks in.
Oh, yeah.
And the Cadillac tax, which really impacts organized labor and unions, and which says that if you have benefits greater than a certain amount of money, the people who receive those benefits have to pay tax on it. And that stuff is really the hidden poison pill. And the unions and the President Obama has put off that phasing in until after he's out of office.
Mm.
So what's happening is the next president who comes in is going to have to deal with the fact that the Cadillac tax kicks in. We're going to also have to deal with the fact that more physicians are not accepting Medicaid, new Medicaid patients, which is covered by Obamacare. More seniors who are covered by Medicare, physicians are not going to accept new Medicare patients because the Medicare reimbursement rates are lower.
Right.
So we are now focusing in on one of the largest sectors of our economy, which are the baby boomers, are not going to have the medical care that they need because Obamacare and Medicare is going to reduce their options, which is exactly what was said when Obamacare was voted in, and President Obama has deferred it until he left office. So that's really the poison pill coming up in the next couple of years.
Well, I can't quote the source, but recently, the last day or two, a number of states came out saying how they're going to have to raise, the costs from 25% to over 50%, I think, in Minnesota, because there's been a lot more instances that people who signed on to the ACA are putting a lot more claims than they initially thought.
Well, and the other thing is, Kevin Dayhill from the Health and Hospital Corporation and I put together a paper when I was at Dowling College, mm-hmm. which really investigated what they call RomneyCare in Massachusetts. And what happened was, whereas initially healthcare premiums were lower and healthcare costs were lower, and that was artificially set up by the insurance companies to get into, to provide the policies. And once those initial contracts expired, healthcare costs are going up. And the healthcare companies right now are saying that they're going to increase premiums, and they're going to lower reimbursement rates, and the healthcare costs are going up. And that's going to impact the seniors and the middle class, and it's not going to impact the younger people, the millennials, because they're not buying that. They're not buying healthcare, which is what the whole point of Obamacare was about. Those people who don't need it buy it to pay for those who do. So the foundation of Obamacare and healthcare is really on very shaky grounds right now.
Well, I mean, it could be a whole other show, but it's essentially getting it to a single-payer system.
Well, in single-payer system, you got Canada, where you have to wait months to get care. And nobody wants, when people need to go to a physician in the United States, they want to go for a physician. And single-payer system never works.
Martin, it's been a great conversation. My last question, what can we do to prepare Long Island for the next generation?
Become educated. Don't be lemmings into the sea that you follow the lead guy and jump off the cliff. Okay? The worst thing a politician wants is an educated electorate. Because they can't lead people who are smart and intelligent.
Oh yeah.
They can only lead people who aren't intelligent, who listen to the sound bites, And play on the emotion. Or I have to say, like Hillary Clinton said, when someone asked her a tough question the other day saying, I think I'm going to have a piece of pie. Okay? We need our leaders to do more than eat a piece of pie.
Right.
And
right.
it's up to us and your listeners to say to the presidential candidates, put the pie aside, answer my question.
Well said. Well said. Martin, it's been a great conversation. I appreciate you spending some time with us today on the Prophet Express.
Enjoyed it immensely. Anytime.